Going back to Isaiah and chapter 40 and opening our Bibles up there, we begin with the words in verse 1, "Comfort, comfort my people, says your God." And one of the ways that God would minister to us and comfort us is by showing us himself. So verse 9, "You who bring good tidings to Zion, go up on a high mountain. You who bring good tidings to Jerusalem, lift up your voice with a shout. Lift it up, do not be afraid. Say to the towns of Judah, here is your God." What do we say to the towns of Judah? What do we say when we want to bring good tidings? We say, "Here is your God." So I offer you, as my first message of 2016, it's hard to say that, still want to say 2014, let alone 2015. But as we bring the first message of 2016, I offer you this morning the vision of God. Because what we can get very readily is the vision of man. But what we really need, if our lives are going to be transformed and if we're going to really have something to bring us comfort and to help us in our lives and to offer to others, is we need the vision of God. So the voice in verse 6 says, "Cry out." And Isaiah says, "What shall I cry? Shall I shout about man?" Well, no, verse 6. "All men are like grass, and all their glory is like the flowers of the field. The grass withers and the flowers fall because the breath of the Lord blows on them. Surely the people are grass. The grass withers and the flowers fall, but the word of our God stands forever." Why would I raise my voice and extol the glories of man when I can raise my voice this morning and extol the glories of God? Man and what man makes is as nothing compared to God. Man makes idols, verse 19. "A craftsman casts it, a goldsmith overlays it with gold and fashions silver chains for it. A man too poor to present such an offering selects wood that will not rot. He looks for a skilled craftsman to set up an idol that will not topple." Yeah, man's creations are easily toppled. And man himself is toppled too. He is just like the grass that fades and dies in the autumn and rots away in the winter. Man is not sufficient for a sustaining vision, for a comforting and upholding prospect for our year ahead. We need to see God. And my job, Jamie's job, and the job of any who would tell about Jesus, is to proclaim God, to say, as verse 9 says, "Here is your God." And our society needs that. It's so lacking in society. Society has really lost any kind of sense of who God is. When I was preparing this message, which was a couple of weeks ago, the news was full of the death of David Bowie. And strangely, there was an awful lot said about heaven, and there was an awful lot said about God in all that was being spoken about David Bowie himself. And there were quotes about God, even from Bowie. But the heaven that people were speaking of was very earth-like. And the God that people were speaking about was very man-like. The vision of God and his glory, the vision of heaven as a place of God's glory, is alien, is strange, is lost to our society. David Bowie himself said, as he plunged into drugs and hedonism, he said, "I felt totally, absolutely alone. And I probably was alone because I pretty much had abandoned God. And it's interesting that Bowie throughout his life displayed a belief in the God whom he had, by his own confession, abandoned. And society's like that. We have this strange thing that whenever there is some tragedy, people suddenly start speaking about God and heaven and the afterlife, even though we're supposed to be very secular today. But we've lost a sense of what God is like. We've lost a sense of what heaven is like. And that's hardly surprising if that's happened in society, because it's happened in the church. If the church is supposed to proclaim to society, here is your God. If the church has lost a vision of God, how can the church expect society to have a vision of God? A few days back, I was reading a little account which Murdo Murchison has written about what he describes as the marvellous times of blessing in the 1970s in the area. We may perhaps publish, I haven't asked Murdo yet if we can do this, maybe publish it in the newsletter. It's just a short account. And he says this, he says, God has never allowed me to experience anything like it since then. Of course, it's refreshing to know of people here and there coming to faith, but that deep intensity does not appear to be there. Even in the church, there's not that deep intensity of vision of God and awareness of God. And if we've forgotten how great God is, then our lives are going to be stunted as a result. We're going to live with a lack of reality if we've lost the vision of God. In my mind, I have this picture of an occasion you quite often see in films where someone says, he's behind you. The giant is behind you. And the person sort of turns round to see the giant and looks at eye level. I don't see no giant. You're looking at his feet. And then they turn around again and they go, and they look up and up and up and up and, oh, there's the giant. And what we're doing a lot of the time in society is we're just looking at eye level. We're not looking up. We're thinking of God as though he's our size, rather than one who is towering over us in his glory. It's like that in society, and it's even like that in the church. We look for God at eye level. We look for God at human level, and we forget that if he is just at eye level, he's not God. He's not worthy of worship, and we're in big trouble. Isaiah then presents us with a vision of God. Verse 12, let's start with verse 12. Here's some pictures. God measuring the seas, the oceans, in his hand. So God's hand and the ocean is in his hand. There's how great he is. Or with the breadth of his hand, he's marking off the heavens, the stars and the galaxies. Or he gathers all the dust of the earth into a little basket of his. Or he takes out his scales, and his scales are so great that he can just put mountains and hills on them. These are the kind of pictures that we need to have of God. Verse 15, Isaiah says, the nations of the earth, they're just like a drop of water in a bucket. As dust, you know, when you bring your scales out, you haven't had them out for a while, you blow the dust off the top of them. He says, that's like the nations of the world to God. That's how small they are. The distant islands, they're just like fine dust. Lebanon, all the great cedars of Lebanon are not sufficient for the altar fires that God deserves, not its animals enough for the burnt offerings of which he is worthy. Before him, verse 17, the nations are as nothing. They're regarded by him as worthless, as less than nothing. Like, if God needed help, he wouldn't look to the nations. He wouldn't look to man. He doesn't need help, but if he did, the level of help he'd be needing would be nothing that man would be able to look at or supply. God's on a different scale, says Isaiah. His majesty, his power. If you try to understand God, or if you think you can understand God, you've got it all wrong. Verse 13. Who has understood the mind of the Lord and instructed him as his counselor? Whom did the Lord consult to enlighten him? And who taught him the right way? Who was it that taught him knowledge or showed him the path of understanding? Has God ever come to any one of you for advice? You might have offered God some advice occasionally, as we do. We do it when we're praying sometimes. God, I think this might be a good idea. Because we actually think of God as though he thinks like us. As though he thinks on our level. As though his very highest thoughts are the same as our very highest thoughts. And as though we can critique him for being what he is and doing what he does and saying what he says. Well, it's not like that, says Isaiah. And imagine if it was like that. Imagine the consequences for the world if the God of the universe only had an IQ of 110 or something. If the God of the universe was just no smarter than any of us. Imagine the consequences for the universe when we as human beings can't figure out our own problems and can't sort our own troubles. If God was just the same, if he was scratching his head too. And yet often, if you look at yourself, listen to yourself pray, or thinking about God, you're thinking as though he's thinking like you, and he's not. So we can't really compare God with ourselves. Verse 18 says that. To whom then will you compare God? What image will you compare him to? Or verse 25, to whom God asks, will you compare me? Or who is my equal, says the Holy One. He's a giant. And that's why his commandment is, you shall have no other gods before me. You can't make anything to represent God. You can't set alongside God something that's going to try and express or inform about what God is like. He is wiser and more understanding, more majestic and powerful than we could possibly ever grasp or understand, even in our wildest imaginations. People are small, and we need not to forget it. People are very small. Verse 21. Do you not know? Have you not heard? Has it not been told you from the beginning? Have you not understood since the earth was founded? God sits enthroned above the circle of the earth. Its people are like grasshoppers. He stretches out like the heavens like a canopy and spreads them out like a tent to live in. He brings princes to naught and reduces the rulers of this world to nothing. No sooner are they planted, no sooner are they sown, no sooner do they take root in the ground than he blows on them and they wither. And a whirlwind sweeps them away like chaff. People are small. If we strut on the stage of history, on the stage in Plockton, we must remember what we are compared to God. And when we pray the Lord's Prayer, we must really mean it. Thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory. Strutting before God is just risible, laughable. God is far more glorious than we human beings can ever comprehend. So we need to have a vision of God and his majesty and his glory. But when we've got that vision, We need to have another vision as well. Because we mustn't for a moment think that if God is so beyond us in his majesty, that he therefore doesn't care. He's not too great to care. So after you've had a glimpse of the giant's feet, as it were, after you've known that his majesty stretches up into the clouds out of sight, far beyond you, after you've marvelled at God, remember also another vision of God, of the time when he came to us at eye level. Isaiah speaks about that in verses 3 to 5. These are words in verses 3 to 5 that are often quoted in the New Testament. And they're quoted about the coming of John the Baptist, preparing the way for the coming of Jesus Christ. So verse 3, a voice of one calling in the desert, prepare the way for the Lord. So often that's quoted by Mark's gospel right at the beginning and the other gospels. It's John the Baptist. He's calling in the desert, prepare the way for the Lord. Now it's, if you've got the NIV or the Authorized Version, it's capital L-O-R-D, meaning it's the holy name of God, Yahweh, the name of God, the sovereign Lord, the creator of the universe. He's coming. And he comes as a man, Christ Jesus. The God who is the giant, the God who is beyond all comparison, beyond human thought, comes as a man. Make straight in the wilderness a highway for our God. Every valley shall be raised up, every mountain and hill made low. The rough ground shall become level, the rugged places a plain. And the glory of the Lord will be revealed, and all mankind together will see it, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken. And the glory of the Lord was revealed. As John writes in his gospel, we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. The glory was revealed in Jesus Christ. God's glory, but on eye level, on man's level, on human level, speaking human words, thinking human thoughts, doing human actions. He came as the good shepherd on our level. So, verse 11, that he could tend his flock like a shepherd, gather the lambs in his arms and carry them close to his heart and gently lead those that have young. There is another vision that we need to have beside the vision of God's majesty and glory, and it's the vision of God in Jesus as the good shepherd. It's the vision of God coming on human level to minister to mankind on a level that you and I can actually relate to, with a love that touches our hearts, with a compassion that is concerned for our needs, with a ministry that actually helps us day by day in our lives. The ministry of the Good Shepherd, coming with all the attributes of God, coming with his righteousness and his truth, with his power and with his character, with his patience and his compassion and his love and his forgiveness to us. The Good Shepherd, Jesus Christ. And we need both sides of the vision. I can illustrate it like this. If I become really ill and I have to go into hospital, it's really good for me to have two visions of the NHS. And I need them both to really have confidence in my being in hospital and that it's going to help. I need a vision of, first of all, the human side of the NHS, which is the nurse who's mopping my fevered brow or whatever she's doing or he's doing. I need a vision of the nurse, that man or woman is caring and competent, that individual. But really, if all I've got is the nurse, then I'm in real trouble. Because the nurse, on his own or her own, is just one individual. I need to have another vision, and it's the vision of the NHS, as we know, being one of the biggest organisations in the world. The NHS employs 1.6 million people in the UK. It's not incredible. 1.6 million dedicated individuals with a vast range of specialised skills, accompanied by a panoply of technical ability and of technological advancement. That means that when an individual nurse is ministering to me, they bring to me a wealth of possible therapy and help and cure, which they as individuals couldn't supply. And if I have a vision of both, then I can both feel reassured by the compassion and the humanity of the nurse, but also by the knowledge that behind that individual there is all the resource and skill and technology and therapeutic possibility of this vast organisation, the NHS. So it is with God. I want to have a vision of God as the Good Shepherd. But if my Jesus is just a man Jesus, then he is of very limited help to me. But my Jesus, the Good Shepherd, who comes on a human level, whose hands reach out and touch and reassure and strengthen, whose eyes look into mine and whose heart beats with mine. Behind that vision, there is the vision of Jesus as God, the one who measures the oceans in the palm of his hand, the one to whom is available all the vast intelligence of divinity, who would never need to be advised by man, nor would he ever need to be aided by man, because he is the giant. He is God in all his glory and excellence. He comes to me then both on the level of the vast and the majestic and the infinite, but also on the level of the human at eye level, personally, to me, the Good Shepherd, the man Christ Jesus. And when I'm in need, when you're in need, let's remember both sides of that vision. Because we are in need. We are desperately in need. Desperately in need. But our God is willing and he is able. He is Lord of all, as Paul says, but he richly blesses all who call on him. For all who call on the name of the Lord will be saved. So verse 27, as we finish off. Why do you say, O Jacob, and complain, O Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord, my cause is disregarded by my God? He's just too big, he's just too great to think about me. Do you not know? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow tired or weary, and his understanding no one can fathom. But then he gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak. Even youths grow tired and weary and young men stumble and fall. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint.